I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to The Hour of the Time. Ladies and gentlemen, I got four different letters today, all telling me that somebody I never heard of before in my life, don't know anything about, has stated on the radio that I'm chicken to appear on his show. I didn't even know he had a show. I don't even know who the hell he is. And I've never been asked by anybody by that name in my entire memory of my entire life to appear on anything that anybody by that name has ever done that I can remember. I'm going to put that in there because I get a lot of calls, and it's just possible that a long time ago somebody did by that name ask me to be on a show, if they have a show, but I don't remember it. But the allegation that I'm chicken to be on anybody's show is just totally unbelievable after all that I do here. And the risk and the chances that I've taken, and I got to tell you, folks, I was a patrol boat captain in Vietnam. No, not the kind that's way out on the ocean, the kind that goes up rivers, narrow rivers and creeks. And that's the most terrifying thing that I've ever done in my life. And I did it for a year, and we only patrolled at night. In the daytime, we had three boats on the river, two PBRs and one LCPO. And at night, we all went out on the river, and I engaged in firefights almost, not every night, but almost every night for that entire year, except for 5 days when I took an R&R to Hawaii. And another 3 days when I transported a prisoner to Camp Carter, which was our headquarters, and at the same time was lucky enough to catch the Bob Hope show at Da Nang. And one other short period of time that I took an R&R for 5 days in Australia. And except for those short periods of time, I engaged in one of the most harrowing, most terrifying professions that I believe has ever existed upon this earth. You see, on a patrol boat, you can't dig a hole and hide in it. There are no trees in a river that you can stand behind. And you can't leave because the moment you leave, they plant mines in the river, and when you come back, you get blown all to hell. So, I don't know who this guy is, but if he really said on the radio that I'm chicken to appear on his show, then he hasn't got one smidgen of brains in his head, and is probably some wacko crackpot that hasn't got the slightest idea who he's talking about or what he's talking about. So if you're the one of the ones that listen to his show and he says things like this, don't send me a letter. Because I'm really not interested in that kind of stuff. And I wouldn't even comment about it, except so many people seem to be concerned about it. Call him and tell him what you think about his statement. If he really wants me to appear on his show, all he has to do is call me. If he has the kind of show that I like to appear upon, I will consent to be a guest. If it's one of these wacko Looney Tunes shows, then no, I never appear on those. I never appear on socialist-oriented shows. but I will be the guest on any show that tries to promote truth and is about liberty, the preservation and the furtherance of liberty. If it's that kind of show, no problem. If it's not, no. And it has nothing to do with being chicken, folks. Nothing whatsoever. It has to do with not wanting to waste my time. And if he's really one of these kind of people who make statements like that, I doubt if I would ever want to appear on his show. That is, if he even has one. I have no idea. But you see, there's a formula in radio. And it's how we count our listening audience. And that's why we know we have at least 10 million listeners out there on shortwave and satellite. There's a formula for how many listeners are represented by each piece of mail that you get. You see, there's a theory. I don't know if it's factual, but it's one method of measuring your listening audience. And that is, for every letter that someone bothers to sit down and write, there are X number of people who never write a letter, but who are listening. So if you get, say, 10 letters, according to this formula, you have approximately 500 or 600 listeners. And that's if you're talking about a really super interesting topic. Okay? We get thousands of letters every week. You wouldn't believe the mail that comes in here. So 4 letters represents a lot of listeners, and that's why I address the topic. I just really don't care, folks. You know, I really don't. So, but if one of you has a chance, would you please, instead of writing and telling me what he said, write and tell me who the hell he is? Because now I'm curious. Don't go away. I'll be right back. Tonight, another wonderful episode from NASA Mooned America by Renee. You know, we're getting a lot of orders for this book. In fact, a lot of people have ordered 3 copies just for themselves. Now, they're probably not going to keep them themselves. They'll probably give 2 as gifts. This is a good gift, by the way. If you'd like to order your copy, it's $30 post-paid. It's an expensive book. It has color photographs in it. 3 brilliant color photographs, perfectly printed. The black and white photographs are perfectly printed. They have to be for you to be able to see what's being pointed out in these photographs. But the book is not just about photographs. It's about a lot of other things concerning NASA and the space program. And it will prove to you, beyond any shadow of any doubt whatsoever, that NASA intentionally faked photographs. And I'm going to tell you right now, they faked them all. They also faked the videotapes that you saw and the motion picture films from the moon and from some of the earlier space programs. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, if NASA really sent anybody to the moon. All I can tell you for absolute certain is that the photographs, the videotape, the film are all faked. This book proves that. I've proven it to you on many episodes of The Hour of the Time. And there have been others who have written books and published papers
which prove, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that NASA published and has presented to the public fake, phony photographs. They've also faked a lot of other data. A lot of the mathematics does not add up. A lot of the science does not add up. A lot of the statements the astronauts themselves say are in contradiction to what they have said at other times. The evidence that is mounting, ladies and gentlemen, is incredibly pointing to the possibility that NASA never sent anybody to the moon ever. Now, I also know from my research, which you don't know, most people will never know because it's difficult to find, and it took me many years to dig it out, that there was a secret, hidden space program run by the military and what is known as ARPA, or to some people, DARPA, Defense Advanced Projects Agency. There was also a secret organization under the Department of the Navy, which was concerned with advanced scientific research. And I am certain that in those hidden programs, a secret technology was developed, which you know as unidentified flying objects, which I know are not unidentified at all, but are in fact known to those who developed them and fly them and experiment with them and perpetrate a great deception with them, that we are somehow in danger from some species from some other planet. And this, coupled with some very sophisticated mind control techniques and experimentation and projects, which result in this so-called alien abduction phenomenon, are all pointing us in one direction. You see, according to the theory, a government cannot exist unless it protects those that it governs from some imagined or some real threat. If they truly want to bring about world government, they must have some threat to this world from some external source to take the place of wars between nations and terrorists and Jews and Arabs and all that kind of crap. And I'm sure you get my drift. Anyway, if you'd like to order your copy of NASA Mooned America, and these are only published in very limited quantities at a time, and we just bought this publication out for the last printing, and I don't know when it's going to go to print next. We have just probably, maybe a little over 100 copies left. So if you want to get a copy and not have to wait quite a while for the next printing, you had better order it now. It's called NASA Mooned America by Renee. It's $30 post-paid. You can order a copy by making a check or money order payable to Annie. A-N-N-I-E. Don't put anything else on the pay-to line. Make check or money order payable to Annie. Address your envelope to the Intelligence Service. The Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420. That's P.O. Box 1420. SHOLO, spelled exactly as it sounds, just like you learned in first grade, show and low, Arizona, 85901. That's the Intelligence Service, P.O. Box 1420. SHOLO, Arizona, 85901. And I'll try to repeat that later in the program. I was going to give you an address last night and ran out of time. And I mean ran out of time. Just barely.
And I really don't even know if we really made it, to tell you the truth. And I guess we'll find that out sooner or later, won't we? Okay, pay attention, because this is interesting. When you get this book, those of you who have ordered it, oh boy, you're going to have trouble putting it down, and you probably won't sleep until you've read it all that first night, the day you get it. The asp, spelled A-S-P, is a small, extremely venomous cobra-type reptile found in Egypt and other parts of the continent of Africa. It is historically famous for being Cleopatra's accomplice in suicide. You see, she chose to asp clasp, and the little viper accommodated her by nipping her breast. Like Cleopatra, we must be suicidal also, because we have been grasping another sneaky little snake to our federal breast for over 30 years. It is also doing its aspy thing. This asp is an acronym for, quote, Apollo Simulation Project, end quote, which was created in 1961 and operated by the Defense Intelligence Agency to, quote, help, end quote, NASA with their technical problems by establishing a totally simulated moon mission. You weren't aware of that, were you? You also weren't aware that the Defense Intelligence Agency wasn't supposed to have anything to do with NASA, which is supposed to be a totally civilian-run, reporting only to civilians, and all of their research was supposed to, according to their charter, be available for public use. But that was never the case, ladies and gentlemen. You see, ASP was a total secret project. In fact, not just secret, super secret, top secret. You had to have a Q clearance to get anywhere near it, and a Q clearance wouldn't suffice. You had to have the need to know. It was a top secret project along the same lines as the Manhattan Project of World War II, which developed, as you know, the atomic bomb. The Manhattan Project ultimately employed some 300,000 people, and hardly a word was ever leaked. Don't ever believe that they can't keep secrets. And don't believe this crap about all these leaks all over the place. There are no leaks, ladies and gentlemen. When leaks occur, they are intentional. And people who allow leaks to occur or leak information are quickly caught and quickly punished severely. Nobody gets away with that. This is a secrecy nation. The Manhattan Project served as a proving ground for security techniques and personnel manipulation on a broad-based program that to this day has not failed. Oh, you say atomic secrets leaked to Russia? Well, you're wrong, folks. Those atomic secrets were given to Russia by the highest authorities in the government, purposefully, under an agreement reached between Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill, which determined the political makeup of the post-World War. The Cold War was a scam used to take vast sums of money from the public pockets of all of the nations of the world. In order to fund wars for population control in third world nations, never confrontations between the superpowers, and to develop technology which would be used to control the populations of the world in the New World Order. Some of you don't believe that, but you will ultimately, whether I cause you to believe it with the information you hear on this broadcast, or you ultimately live to see it come true, you will ultimately understand and believe it. to have gone to this much trouble as early, ladies and gentlemen, as 1961, that early in the program, is a sure sign that NASA knew up front that no one was going to see anybody on the moon. It is difficult for the average person to believe that a huge governmental conspiracy exists or has ever existed because they know the difficulty people have in keeping small secrets. They visualize a few thousand people involved and believe it is virtually impossible to keep them quiet indefinitely. But it's just not true. To this day, I have not spoken about many, many, many things that I saw and read and know about from the days when I had a Q clearance and an SCI rating. Anyone who knows about Air America, the Central Intelligence Agency-controlled largest commercial air fleet in the world, should hardly be surprised. As Bill Kaysing says, Air America is noted for its two distinct types of alumni, the silent and the silenced. The ASP base, ladies and gentlemen, was constructed on land controlled by the Atomic Energy Commission and surrounded by other military bases, none of them very near, scattered throughout these arid moon-like properties near Mercury, Nevada, are super secret site after super secret site. No one goes out there who is not cleared. And even if they are cleared, they do not go out there unless they absolutely need to go out there to perform whatever job it is that they perform. And then they are only allowed to see that portion of whatever it is that's out there that has to do with their particular function in life. Top-level management for ASP was provided by the Central Intelligence Agency. Interface personnel were hired as needed, paid top dollar, and released as necessary, with the required never-tell NASA warnings backed by the muscle of the Central Intelligence Agency. Picture this. In a cavern on the base, an elaborate soundstage, codenamed Copernicus, was built and outfitted with everything necessary to simulate moon pictures. It was named by someone with little knowledge of history after a crater on the moon. That crater was named after an early seeker of cosmic truth, Nicholas Copernicus. So this cognomen for this nefarious studio is puzzling to say the least. However, there may be something in universal justice because this studio soon became, quote, cuss, end quote, in the base vernacular because of the problems that developed after Central Intelligence Agency amateurs tried to make Hollywood-style effects. This comes from someone who worked there. Also installed at the CUS base was the true master control center, of which the so-called mission control and the spacecraft center at Houston were merely satellites or slaves. The master control of CUS, or MASCON call, collected all data, programmed it into a computer, which then coordinated the entire moon landing simulation. Since all releases were by well-edited tape, there was no chance of a blooper. Again, the total control of news by the American corporate state set an effective precedent for the totally controlled output of MASCON call. From pre-launch, countdown to the final descent to the ocean, all sound and video transmissions emanated from the flawless and mechanistic heart of a specially modified IBM 370C computer. If you don't feel that some central news agency distributes the news to the TV stations, then channel surf on the major channels during the 6 o'clock or 11 o'clock news. More often than not, ladies and gentlemen, the same story is being broadcast at the same time, give or take a few ticks of the clock. Now, if you think that contradicts what I've told you before about the press not being owned by one or two people who control the press, it does not at all. Remember what I told you about patriots not supporting their own causes? How many of you own stock in CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, Gannett Incorporated, or any of the other newspaper or media chains? The only ones I know of who do are some of the listeners to the Hour of the Time who do own stock in Gannett Company Incorporated. You see, our enemies support their causes. They buy the companies, and the stupid Americans sell those companies to them because they're greedy. You don't believe it? One of these nights I'll do a demonstration for you, and you'll see. And I know exactly how to do it. To show you that most so-called patriots care more about making a nickel than they ever will about the Constitution for the United States of America. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a fact. I can already tell you that this entire listening audience as a whole cares more about this book, the space program, UFOs, science fiction, free energy scams, and a whole lot of other things, than they ever have about anything that we've ever offered on this broadcast that is patriotic in nature or that would help our cause to save the Constitution for the United States of America. That's a fact. And I've always known that. That's why I really have the attitude that I have most of the time. I really don't give a rat's butt. Except about the battle that I'm fighting and those who want to fight it with me. Nobody else matters to me. I have become jaded. Started out loving my fellow man with a great faith in the American people, and I have been smacked in the nose by reality. And don't bother writing me a letter and telling me it's not reality. It's been proven to me time and time and time again. Those of you who don't believe that are living in a fantasy world. Most people have one thing and one thing only in their mind, and that is their own personal welfare, survival, and wealth. Including most so-called patriots. Today, we would have absolutely no problem with the idea that a huge mainframe computer and even some very powerful home computers could control and handle an entire show of this magnitude from pre-recorded tapes. In fact, I have a computer that can do it, and that could have done it, could have handled the entire phony moon simulation. But had anyone suggested the idea in 1969, people would have thought the person to be crazy. However, the Apollo serials were successfully aired, proving that an IBM 370C computer could and did handle the show from pre-recorded tapes, radio data, messages, TV pictures, etc. The huge moon mock-up, of course, we have already revealed on this broadcast, was built in a soundstage in the Walt Disney Studios, and probably most of the filming from that sort of aspect was done there. The astronauts were very carefully led into the intrigue one at a time and were told only as much as was required for their mission. They would either go along or get along. If there was even a doubt as to their total loyalty to the program, the dissidents were sidetracked out of the mainstream or they mysteriously died in some incredible accident. These were the best pilots in the world, ladies and gentlemen, and they flew probably the safest planes ever built, trainers. Do any of you have any idea how many of them died in plane crashes in those trainers?
And do you know, for comparison, how many people died in those trainers in all of the military services put together during that period of time? Do you know what the odds are? I challenge you to look it up. You're going to start scratching your head because I'm going to tell you right now. Those couldn't have been accidents. Not flying those planes. Not those planes being flown by the best pilots in the world. No way. Remember, I come from a military family. My father was a pilot. I was reared in the Air Force. And I have done over 25 years of research into these types of phenomena, if you want to call them that. After the Grissom Chaffee White incineration, a young man at the height of your prime, being offered the kind of fame, money, and power and future that those young men were offered? And what if someone came to you and said, this is all going to be simulated, you're going to be a part of it, because by doing this, we're going to create a better world for all humanity. And what if they were persuasive in their argument? On the one hand, fame, money, and power. On the other hand, a federal funny farm or death, or dishonor and disgrace. In this world, there are peaceful nations, military nations, and police states. We are the only one that brags we are the first, have always been the second, and are now rapidly evolving into the third. And nobody seems to care. Are you kidding me? The news and TV shows indicate every day our government confiscates property and even arrests money, cars, houses, and other inanimate objects of value on the mere presumption of guilt as reparations in the drug war and other causes. All unconstitutional, all illegal. This, to my mind, is martial law at its worst, but our press never even mentions it, do they? Nobody seems bothered by it, and nobody really seems to care except just a few handful of us, and the rest believe are crazy wacko lunatics, somehow really worried about liberty. Bill Casing, a former employee of Rocketdyne, reports that the Saturn V moon rockets held a cluster of five B-1 engines instead of the more powerful but totally unreliable F-1 engines. Each B-1, ladies and gentlemen, produced a thrust of 150,000 pounds. While a single F-1 produced 10 times as much. Had this substitution not been made, the moon rocket, in its designed form, would have weighed 6 million pounds, or 3,000 tons fully loaded. This is the weight of a United States naval destroyer, further pointing out the total impracticality of the venture. Thus, the stripped-down moon rockets that actually blasted off from Kennedy weighed about 300,000 pounds, and were light enough for the five B-1s to get airborne. Here, Bill Casing and I part company because he believes that the astronauts were never launched. I say that they had to go with the big bird. The very danger of explosion was the reason. If a rocket had blown away on the pad, then NASA would have had three live astronauts to explain to the public instead of three atomized corpses. Such a type of accident would have created immense problems for everyone. Just think how nervous it would have made the surviving astronauts knowing that their buddies were whacked just to keep a secret. Now, surely, folks, one of them would have run to the press to avoid the possibility of a similar fate in the near future. It's one thing to die in a flight or a fight or in the interest of a better humanity in a peaceful world. That's a bit glamorous, but to be slaughtered like a sheep is quite something else again. Had NASA done it any other way, the rest of the astronauts would have panicked. Remember, these were test and combat fighter pilots who took risks.
as often as necessary. Just as long as there was a good chance of a liftoff, they would risk the ride. It was fun to these men. That's what they lived for. Also, they had been riding the B-1 engines for years during the Gemini program. I believe that each mission was on sequential tapes and programmed into the computer weeks before the liftoff. The immense number of simulations took months to create, and probably more time to carefully edit and weave the simulations into the fabric of the next Apollo mission. Once the simulations were prepared, all that was left was to provide the distraction that is vital to con man and magician alike. Remember the Magi? Just before the deception begins. In this case, it was the public launching at Cape Canaveral, or Cape Kennedy, that provided all the flame, fury, and flash that any magician could ever ask for. It focused the attention of billions of people around the world on the launch, while diverting us from the scam. The next time the ASP strikes, it will be to take us to Mars via digitized graphics and computer enhancements, and no one but no one, maybe not even God himself, will be able to prove it's not real.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. Something touched me deep inside today. The music died.
Ladies and gentlemen, the hour of the time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They deal in non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets, which you're going to need in the coming weeks, months, or years, because everything is coming crashing down. Did you ever believe in your life that it could be proven that NASA faked all their photographs, television coverage, and film, and that maybe the evidence would mount pointing that NASA may have never sent anyone to the moon of all? Well, that's what's happening now. And if you had lived 100 years ago, you never would have believed that our money would have disappeared by now. But nobody has any money now, unless you deal with our sponsor. Listen to this. Section 13 of the money law, the Coinage Act of April 2nd, 1792, one statutes, section 246, statute 1, and this is chapter 16, section 13. And I'm just going to read you this because it's going to reveal something to you that you never knew before. And be it further enacted that the standard for all silver coins of the United States shall be 1,485 parts fine to 179 parts alloy. And accordingly, that 1,485 parts in 1,664 parts of the entire weight of each of the said coins shall consist of pure silver, and the remaining 179 parts of alloy, which alloy shall be wholly copper. Now, listen very carefully to this, section 19. And to be it further enacted that if any of the gold or silver coins which shall be struck or coined at the said mint shall be debased or made worse as to the proportion of the fine gold or fine silver therein contained, or shall be of less weight or value than the same, out to be pursuant to the directions of this act, through the default or with the connivance of any of the officers or persons who shall be employed at the said mint for the purpose of profit or gain, or otherwise with a fraudulent intent, and if any of the said officers or persons shall embezzle any of the metals which shall at any time be committed to their charge for the purpose of being coined, or any of the coins which shall be struck or coined at the said mint,
every such officer or person who shall commit any or either of the said offenses shall be deemed guilty of felony and shall suffer death. Call 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. And make sure you get the next issue of Veritas. The entire act will be printed in that issue. 1-800-289-2646. Folks, you'll be glad that you did.
Venus.
A girl who wants my kisses and my arms. A girl with all the charms of you.
Oh, Saturn.
Venus, take her fair. A lovely girl with sunlight in her hair.
Yeah, Venus, 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 Venus.
In the sky, place them in her eyes for me.
Oh, I love to have a little fun once in a while. What a scam this is. A little over 30 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, a very popular new president, I know because I just loved him to death. Talk about witty, handsome, always said exactly what needed to be said and had a joke ready. I mean, he was just what everybody always believed the president should be. Turns out he wasn't a very good president. It turns out that he's the one who created the disarmament agency and took State Department publication 7277 to the United Nations and was trying to propel us directly into world government. But we didn't know that at the time. I was still stupid. I don't know about you. Most of you haven't even lived up to the fact that you could have ever been stupid any time, not even when you were a little bitty baby, right? you can't improve until you admit where you've been wrong. I was stupid a good portion of my life, and I fell right for it. I loved him. He was besieged by events which we believed were completely beyond his control, and really, if you know what I know, they were. The president is a figurehead for the real power. He doesn't come up with all the ideas that he presents to Congress or to the American public. These things are given to him. Castro had taken Cuba away from a tyrant named Batista. Both the mafia and the Central Intelligence Agency were frothing at the mouth. They lost a lot of money. The mafia, because it had lost their casinos and the millions, maybe even billions, that came from those casinos. And the Central Intelligence Agency, because a ragamuffin Cuban communist and his army had taken power on an island just a few miles off our coast. But I'm going to tell you right now, folks, I think the CIA actually had a hand in that, because they were telling the administration that Castro was not a communist. And they knew it all along that he was. Kennedy had barely settled into the Oval Office when the Russians followed up their Sputnik success and on April 12, 1961, sent Yuri Gagarin into orbit on Vostok 1 for 108 minutes. I was impressed. In fact, I dropped everything that I had ever done in my young life and began assembling rockets and presented as my science fair project that year a three-stage rocket, complete, designed, and posters and everything, and I won. was wonderful. We all went nuts about space. And if that wasn't enough, that same week, the Central Intelligence Agency botched the Bay of Pigs landing, and I wonder how they could have done that, unless they really wanted to. And that's exactly what they wanted to do, because it enabled Castro, ladies and gentlemen, to round up all of his opposition at one time. How about that? They botched the Bay of Pigs landing. Led by the CIA, a ragtag battalion of Cuban expatriates was supposed to reconquer Cuba and make it safe for both democracy, the CIA, and their old World War II partners, the Mafia. Didn't happen that way. My family has known an awful lot about the CIA for many years. My brother took a vacation and went on a fishing trip with my father and one of my father's friends who worked for the CIA. My father had cautioned his friend against attempting to recruit my brother, who won the Silver Star in Vietnam. But my father's friend didn't listen. During the fishing trip out on the boat, he attempted to recruit my brother, and my father almost literally beat him into oblivion because of what he knows about the CIA. On May 25th, 1961, Kennedy broke presidential precedent and delivered a State of the Union message to a joint session of Congress. It was necessitated by racial tensions, the CIA problems in Laos, later called our secret war, denied by president after president, CIA problems with Cuba, and a whole gamut of other foreign entanglements, all involving the Central Intelligence Agency. A nest of vipers, if there ever was one. Break the law routinely. Shredded the Constitution years and years ago. I've murdered so many people that I don't see how any of them could ever sleep. All in the interest of New World Order. Not the United States of America. As has been ingrained into your consciousness over the years. It is a lie. Kennedy sought a national distraction. He also hoped to regain American prestige by asking Congress to drastically expand the space budget at a time when Congress was actually decreasing military spending and trying to cut back on other expenditures. This is what he said. I believe we possess all the resources and talents necessary. And I have to apologize to you folks. I don't have the charm of John F. Kennedy. And if I can find a copy of that speech, I will play it on this broadcast because you really should hear it in his own words. But for the sake of brevity, I'm going to read it to you tonight. I believe we possess all the resources and talents necessary, but the facts of the matter are that we have never made the national decision or marshaled the national resources for such leadership. We have never specified long-range goals on an urgent time schedule, or managed our resources and our time so as to ensure their fulfillment. Recognizing the head start obtained by the Soviets with their large rocket engines, which gave them many months of lead time, and recognizing the likelihood that they will exploit this lead time for some time to come in still more impressive successes, we nevertheless are required to make new efforts of our own. For while we cannot guarantee that we will one day be first, we can guarantee that any failure to make this effort will make us last. We take the additional risk of making it in full view of the world, but as shown by the feat of astronaut Shepard, this very risk enhances our stature when we are successful. But this is not merely a race. Space is open to us now, and our eagerness to share its meaning is not governed by the efforts of others. We got into space because whatever mankind must undertake, free men must fully share. I therefore ask this Congress, above and beyond the increases I have earlier requested for space activity, to provide the funds which are needed to meet the following national goals. First, I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space. End quote. The space program, ladies and gentlemen, became extremely political the instant Sputnik passed over our heads, emitting annoying pings. I can remember laying out in the backyard with the other kids my age, children, I should say. If you call my daughter a kid, she'll tell you a kid is a baby goat, and she's not a kid. And every once in a while, she has to say that to me, and I just don't know why I can't get it through my thick head. But I can remember laying in the backyard with the other children my age, hoping to catch a glimpse of Sputnik, and one night we did. And I'll never forget the excitement. We actually saw what we believed with all of our little hearts to be the first spacecraft ever in the history of the world fly over our heads from horizon to horizon. And we were jubilant. I didn't sleep that night. I couldn't sleep. And we listened on the radio and the television to the little pings. These pings were perceived as the sound of danger, evoking memories of the whistles attached to World War II bombs for those who lived during that period. To us, the children, it represented something entirely different. You see, we actually believed for a little while that we could grow up and walk upon the planet Mars. We thought we would do that. And we talked about it, and we planned, and we did our science projects, and we built rockets and rocket engines, and we spent hours and sometimes days drawing elaborate plans for spaceships. And for those who had lived through World War II, just like the whistles on the bombs, the pings were psychological warfare. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how we entered the space race. General Eisenhower was the supreme commander of the Allied forces during World War II before he became our president. Under pressure, fueled by Sputnik, he signed an executive order that mutated a quiet aircraft and design facility called the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, or NACA, into what would become an insatiable monster called NASA, or the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Ike wasn't too thrilled with the projected costs, and although he wanted our space program in civilian hands, he directed that only military test pilots be allowed to fly the coming rockets. Did you ever wonder why the first team of astronauts numbered exactly 7? Did you ever wonder? Well, we'll get into that another night. Oh, yes. There's a photograph of an astronaut standing on the moon holding a Masonic apron in front of his crotch. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they were all Freemasons. The entire hierarchy of NASA has always been Freemasons, and the head of NASA during the Apollo space program, Mr. Kleindienst, is now the Supreme Grand Master of the Council of the 33rd Degree of the Scottish Rite of the Southern Jurisdiction, just 13 blocks from the White House, in the temple without windows. Did you know that? Well, now you do. And we'll touch on that even more, ladies and gentlemen. And what was the number of the mission that finally actually landed on the moon? Isn't it incredible? Incredible. In January 1959, NASA began a search for the chosen few who would become our first astronauts. They scrutinized the military records of all the current test pilots and then culled 110 names from the various lists. Next, a committee whittled the list down to 32, and those men underwent extensive tests and interviews until only seven remained. These were the men with the right stuff. Don't miss tomorrow night, folks. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
Oh, where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on tired and 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 60-foot highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to order your copy of NASA Mooned America, the price is $30 post-paid. We will not deliver to a post office box. We must have a physical address. Make check or money order payable to any, A-N-N-I-E. Do not write anything else on the pay-to line. Address the envelope and send it to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, spelled exactly as it sounds, Arizona, 85901. That's $30. The title is NASA Mooned America. The price is postpaid. Make check or money order payable to Annie and send to the Intelligence Service, P.O. Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. We only have just a little over 100 copies of this book left, and there won't be any more for a while, folks, not until the next printing. They're very expensive to print, and they're only printed in small quantities. Remember, you can listen to The Hour of the Time on satellite, Galaxy 6, which is G2 on most receivers, transponder 14, 7.56 audio. WWCR Worldwide Shortwave 5.065 megahertz. KDNO FM, Delano, California, covering most of the San Joaquin Valley. And low power FM stations all over America.
Do not.